Okay, well, just like to thank Siv and the other organisers for inviting us. We've been here, and also your stamina for those of you who were at the summer school last week, and those of you who've managed to stay here and not make an early departure for the concert this afternoon. A slight change of tack, I think, from this morning's talks. I'm going to be adding to the knowledge on the basic science. We had a seesaw this afternoon, earlier this morning, and there was seemed to be a plea for more medical input. I'm afraid I'm going to be on the other side of that seesaw. However, I hope that I'll perhaps be able to explain to you that it is a necessary starting point, I think, especially if you're talking about new sorts of therapies. Really, this is an idea. This is joint work with an experimentalist, Claire Lewis, in Sheffield, and Marcus Owen, another mathematician from Loughborough, which is quite close to Nottingham. The outline of the talk, I'll just, for those of you who maybe don't know what macrophages are and aren't totally au fait with the tumour biology, I'll just tell you a few little bits and pieces that are relevant to the story that, or the new therapy that I want to tell you about, then look at a mathematical model that we've been developing to try and understand how well this therapy might work, look at some numerical results, and then try and interpret those results and describe what's going to be happening in the future, where that might lead us to. Okay, so as I'm sure you're all aware, there's lots of different anti-cancer therapies or strategies out there. Surgery is probably the most common thing that we would do, radiotherapy and chemotherapy. All of these different modalities, they have strengths and weaknesses, but the weaknesses of the methods are driving the ongoing search for new complementary therapies. And so what I really want to do in this talk is just talk about one possibility that we've been looking at. Okay, so the sort of motivation for this new therapy is, again, as I'm sure you're all aware, we've heard all week about how complicated biology is, and tumours are no exception. So here's a schematic diagram of a well-developed vascularised tumour, the sort of what a tumour might look like by the time that you would experience any symptoms and go to see your physician or doctor. It's a highly heterogeneous, complex system which changes both spatially and temporally. And one of the characteristic features of many solid tumours, and this is problematic from a treatment point of view, is that regions of low oxygen or hypoxia are widespread. So just to illustrate that, really just focus on the top two panels there. The top panel is just across a section that's been taken of some normal breast tissue, and it's been stained for the oxygen content of the different regions of the section. And what I think you can see, so on the horizontal axis is the oxygen tension in the relevant sections, and you can see that there's predominantly focused around reasonably high normoxic levels. By contrast, if we do the same thing with a sample of breast cancer tissue, then what you can see is that there's a significant proportion of the tissue is characterized by very low oxygen regions. So that's very interesting, but so what? Well, this is problematic for a number of different reasons. First of all, we have poor drug delivery to these low oxygen regions. If you think about that picture that I showed you of a vascularized tumor, so the blood vessels supply oxygen to the tumor cells, and obviously the further you are from a blood vessel, then the oxygen's got further to diffuse. As it's diffusing, it's being consumed. So if you're far away from a blood vessel, then you're more likely to be on under low oxygen. So if you inject your wonder drug into the circulating blood supply, it's going to have longer to travel in order to get to these low oxygen regions. So drug delivery is a problem. Another characteristic feature of these low oxygen regions, so if you imagine the cells, they aren't getting really enough food to do their daily business of rapidly dividing, which is one of the hallmarks of tumour cells. So the way that they respond to the reduction in nutrients and oxygen is to downregulate their rates of cell proliferation. Many anti-cancer drugs are designed on the premise that tumour cells differ from normal cells by proliferating more rapidly. So assuming we can get our drug into these low oxygen regions, then they're not going to be so very effective because the cells aren't dividing very often. So that's another problem. And it gets worse. One of the ways that the cells respond to this low oxygen stress is by producing the very chemicals that elicit a new blood supply into the tumour. So I don't want us all to get too depressed. There is, I hope, some hope, and this is where the macrophage comes in. So macrophages are part of the immune system, a type of white blood cell, and a characteristic feature of macrophages is that they like to go to hypoxic regions in tumours. So what this picture here is just a cross-section through an avascular tumour that's been grown in the laboratory. So you can imagine that there's the surrounding material fluid is rich in nutrients and oxygen. So there's going to be, the oxygen will diffuse through towards the centre of the tumour, and as it diffuses, it will be progressively consumed. So there'll be oxygen-starved region in the centre where the cells are dying, and you can imagine a monotonic decrease in the oxygen tension from the outside of the tumour as we go towards the centre. The picture on the right-hand side is just a fluorescence. What they've done is they've introduced macrophages into the system and allowed them to migrate through the tumour mass. And what you can see happening is that they're aggregating very much around this low oxygen region where the cells are still viable. So these are these hypoxic or low oxygen cells that are sending out signals primarily to recruit the macrophages into these low oxygen regions, which is the same sort of role that macrophages play in, say, response to wound healing or infection. Okay, so whilst there's a lot of debate in the literature as to what function the macrophages play once they reach these low oxygen regions, you'll read one paper and it'll say the presence of macrophages is a good prognostic indicator. You'll read another paper from another lab and they'll say it's a bad prognostic indicator. So there's quite a lot of dispute in the literature as to what role the macrophages play. However, the undisputed fact, I think, is the fact that they do actually go into these low oxygen regions. So the idea of the therapy that we're starting to look at here, okay, so this is just to, demonstrate to you that it's not just a feature of a nice lab setting, it does actually happen in vivo. So this is just a staining through a tissue sample. The V's mark vessels, N's mark necrotic regions. So the brown staining is just showing you where the macrophages are residing, and you can see again it's on the sort of boundary between where we see very low oxygen or widespread cell death, these necrotic regions, and not at some distance from the blood vessels. Okay, so it's a reproducible feature both in vitro in the lab and also in vivo when we look at real tissue sections. And indeed, some tumours, the mass of the tumour may comprise up to 50% macrophages. So how does all of that sort of map into any type of therapy? So what the idea here is to take a patient's own macrophages, extract them, and manipulate them in some way, and then return them back into the patient. The idea is that these macrophages are pre-programmed, they'll migrate specifically to these low oxygen regions of the tumour, And when they're there, they're going to be activated to perform one of possibly two or more functions. And the sorts of functions that they can we might consider them undertaking are being activated to release a cytotoxic drug which will kill the tumour cells, or alternatively they might release anti-angiogenic drugs which will halt the growth of the new blood vessels, which again is a big problem with tumour development. Okay. So it's very much in its infancy, this therapy. We're still in vitro with, I think, some animal trials. But the results so far are, I think, promising. So this is just to show you some results where on the left-hand side we've just taken some avascular tumours and we've allowed sort of sham macrophages to infiltrate, so they're not actually doing anything. On the right-hand side we allow our engineered macrophages, and in this particular instance the macrophages have been engineered to release a cytotoxic drug that will kill the tumour cells under hypoxia, and you can see that there's been a quite dramatic reduction by about a third in the size of the tumour. Okay, so it's not going to cure everything, because really it's just targeting this one specific region that's problematic with standard therapies. So if we could use this then in conjunction with some other types of therapies, then we might expect to see a better response. So whilst the results are promising, there's still a lot of open questions. So I'll just list some of these questions, and hopefully when we go through some of the modelling, then we haven't answered all of these questions by any means, but this is really where we want the work to be going, I think. If you think about it from a practical point of view, if you manipulate, you're not going to be able to manipulate all of a patient's macrophages. How many macrophages do we need to engineer to get a maximum response? In particular, when we re-inject our engineered super-duper macrophages, they're going to have to fight against normal resident macrophages that are already present in the tumour cell. Are they going to be able to displace them? What's the rules of engagement between a normal macrophage, an engineered macrophage, and a tumour cell? How many macrophages should we engineer to get a maximum response? What drugs should we be putting into these macrophages? What should be the balance between cytotoxic drugs, anti-angiogenic drugs? How should we coordinate this with other standard types of therapies? So what I want to do now is, having set the scene for you, is to present a relatively simple mathematical model that we have developed to try and start to address these issues. Okay, so the idea is really just looking at the very simple early experiments in the lab. I think if we can't understand this, then we haven't really got much hope of going into a vascularized tumour in vivo. So going back to the data that I showed you at the beginning, we have an avascular tumour. We seed engineered or normal macrophages around it, and we want to look at how they infiltrate into the tumour mass and what effect it has on the size of the tumour population. So the model that we write down, I'm going to think of three key variables: my tumour cells, my macrophages, and essentially everything else. So that might be extracellular water, extracellular matrix. It's just a generic lump or sort of variable, and really just to make the model as simple as possible, we could refine it to include other variables. I'm going to assume that the way in which when a cell proliferates and increases in mass and volume, the way that it does that is by absorbing cellular material. That's kind of why we have it as a variable. And that when a cell dies and its membrane degrades, then what it does is it releases cellular material. All these key variables are being transported around with a common velocity V, which I'll need to determine. The rates at which my tumour cells are proliferating and dying is going to be regulated by a single rate-limiting nutrient, which you can think of as oxygen. And under hypoxia, under low oxygen, what's going to happen, how my cells respond to this stress, is to produce a chemical signal, a chemoattractant, and that's designed to recruit the macrophages into that particular region of the tumour. When the macrophages reach a hypoxic region, then they become activated. They're going to bind to a tumour cell and they're going to kill it at a rate, obviously, which depends on the local nutrient concentration, so that we can arrange things so that there's a maximum response under low oxygen. And I'm just going to assume a very simple one-dimensional radial geometry. So for those of you who don't like equations, you can sort of ignore most of this. This is just, so we can write down mass balances for all the different variables that I introduced on the previous slide, and that basically incorporates the mechanisms that we think are important. So if we look, for example, at the first equation for the tumour cells, basically what that tells us is how does the tumour population evolve over time. Oh, right, okay, yeah. Let's see, can I work this? Oh, yes. Okay, so the way that the tumour cell population, there's going to be a certain amount of transport. There's a slight minus sign missing there. So we've got transport by this bulk velocity V, and we've perhaps got a certain amount of random motion. Our cells are proliferating at a rate which is modulated by the local oxygen tension. So if there's more oxygen, the cells proliferate more rapidly. The cells proliferate by absorbing cellular material. That's what gives them the extra mass or volume to increase in size. There's a certain rate of cell death, and then importantly there's going to be an additional rate of cell death due to interactions with the macrophages, and that again will be sensitive to the local oxygen tension. And we can write down similar equations for the other variables. I suppose the key thing for the macrophages, certain amount of random motion, but we've also got this directed motion in response to the chemical signal that's being produced by the cells under low oxygen, and that's what's providing a key or a signal to localise them in the hypoxic regions. And similarly, we can write down reaction diffusion equations for diffusible chemicals such as the nutrient oxygen and our chemoattractant. Okay, so it's a fairly horrible system of nonlinear PDEs. We can't really make any analytical progress. I suppose there's a few more bits and pieces of book work if we're going to complete the model, which perhaps I should run on to before I tell you how we solve it. So I mentioned that there was a bulk velocity V with which the cellular material is being transported. We need to define how that velocity evolves, and it turns out that we make an assumption that within the tumour mass there's no holes, which seems reasonably realistic. So what that boils down to in terms of dimensionless variables is that at any point within the tumour volume we preserve n plus m plus l. So this is just tumour cells plus cellular material plus macrophages, that's scaled to a constant. If you take that assumption and add the relevant equations for these three variables, then what you can derive is this relationship for the common velocity with which they're all moving. Again, I think the details don't really matter. Just, of course, our tumour isn't going to be a static entity, it's going to be changing in size, so we need to keep a track of where the tumour boundary is. And essentially what we assume is that we define the tumour as being the sort of maximum extent of where the tumour cell population resides, and we say that the tumour the boundary of our tumour mass moves with the velocity of the tumour population on the boundary. So that gives us this equation that tells us how to update the tumour radius. Obviously, we need to prescribe various boundary and initial conditions. I don't really want to go into the details. It's all fairly standard stuff. The point is, I think, the model's it's fairly unwieldy. And really, I think, to sort of get a feel for what's going on, we have to start making some numerical simulations. So just sort of for those of you who might have lost the plot a bit when we've been looking at the equations, just to get you back on track, Some of the questions that we're kind of interested in is whether or not these engineered macrophages, well, will they be able to get into these low oxygen regions? Are they going to get in there by pushing tumour cells away, in which case, okay, they'll give off a lovely drug, but it won't be targeting the cells that we want it to target. And will they also be able to target any normal macrophages that are present, say, in a normal host? Also, what drugs should be used? Is there a limit to how many macrophages should be engineered to get an optimal response? So I'm going to really now just present a series of numerical results of a number of different case studies to try and build up a picture of how the macrophages, what impact that they're having. So just to start off with, we'll look at the tumour growing before there's any macrophages being introduced into the system, and then we'll gradually build up the complexity. I'll start to let passive macrophages infiltrate into the tumour, then I'll allow them to infiltrate and have some cell kill, and then I'll look at some competition between normal and engineered macrophages to try and build up a picture of how things might be working. So this is just some results of a typical simulation. On the top sort of panel, what we can see, if I try and orientate you, so the horizontal axis is just the position, and then going vertically upwards we have time. So at a given time, we can see from this diagram that the tumour radius is to out here, and depending on the colour coding, that will give us an indication of the number of tumour cells at a given point within the tumour mass. So if you think about what's happening, so if we look at some point in time here, then there's nutrients, oxygen being supplied externally, that's going to be diffusing through the tumour mass, and as it diffuses, it's being consumed. So cells towards the periphery are oxygen-rich and therefore proliferating rapidly. As we move towards the centre, there's a reduction in the oxygen tension and therefore in the rate of cell proliferation. There's an increase in cell death, and that's characterised here by a reduction in the number of tumour cells that are present, until eventually we reach the centre of the tumour mass where there's insufficient oxygen and nutrients to sustain viable tumour cells, and so we just see a widespread region of cellular material, or just cellular material. These two solid lines here are essentially just contours of the nutrient tension, which essentially, crudely speaking, mark the transition from sort of highly rapidly proliferating cells to what we might term as quiescent or hypoxic region, and again the transition from quiescent to necrotic. Okay, these have been chosen somewhat arbitrarily. So the picture at the bottom is the corresponding profile for the oxygen tension, and again, as you might expect, the oxygen is being supplied externally, diffusing towards the center. As it diffuses, it's being consumed by these tumor cells, and so its levels fall until we reach the center, which is characterized by widespread necrotic cell death. So this is all what you might expect, and it just gives us some confidence that the model's behaving in the right sort of a way. And what you can see happening is that this tumor is in fact growing to a diffusion-limited equilibrium size, where there's a balance between the rate of cell proliferation towards the periphery and the rate at which cells are being degraded towards the center. We can try to fit these growth kinetics to try and get a handle on some of the model parameters to experimental data, and we can get reasonable agreement. Again, it's quite difficult to get good parameter estimates from a single study. You tend to have to grope around in the literature and you have to use disparate pieces of information, but certainly we can reproduce to some extent some of the model parameters. Okay, so this is just the profile of the tumour radius. This is just the interface between the necrotic region and the viable region of the tumour. Okay, so that's what happens before we introduce any macrophages. Now let's introduce some macrophages and see what happens. So the top panel is just the tumour cell distribution. And the bottom panel is showing where the macrophages are going to be located. So we let the tumour grow, and then at a certain time, about, I don't know, T equals 10, we introduce macrophages onto the outer boundary of the tumour mass. And then what you can see happening is then the chemoattractant is being produced. So I haven't put on here the oxygen distribution, but I mean, it goes pretty much as we saw in the first simulation, i.e. it decreases monotonically from the outer edge of the tumour mass towards the centre. So we will expect that there's going to be most chemoattractant being produced just inside a small annulus inside the tumour boundary. So what's happening is you can see that once the macrophages have been introduced onto the tumour boundary, then they're migrating in, and by a combination of random motion and chemotaxis, and we can see significant accumulation in the hypoxic region, which is where we'd expect it to, we would expect them to localise. So again, that gives us confidence that the model is actually doing what we want it to do. So just to sort of reiterate, at this level, we've just got passive macrophages migrating through. They're just occupying space. They're not actually doing anything. They're not killing any of the tumour cells. This set of results is really a cautionary tale, that when we look at the literature, we have to be careful about what are the experimentalists telling us. Depending on how you present the data, you can tell sort of at least two completely different stories. So what I've done here is just run a number of different simulations. In the first case, let my tumour grow without any macrophages. Then I'm going to have macrophages moving with no chemotaxis. Then I'm going to have chemotaxis operating, stronger response to chemotaxis, etc., etc. And if you look at this panel up here, what you can see is that as the macrophages become more sensitive or more responsive, so they're moving by chemotaxis, then what we see is that the tumour mass actually gets bigger. So if you look at that data there, then you'd say, okay, the presence of macrophages is a bad prognostic indicator. My tumour's got bigger. However, if we sort of interrogate the data a little bit more carefully and actually look at the proportion, how the tumour, what proportion of the tumour, how the tumour mass is decomposed into, say, tumour cells and macrophages, then we get a slightly different picture. So these two panels down here at the bottom, what they're doing is saying, so, okay, in this first picture here, the tumour mass is made up of about 50% tumour cells. The rest is just extracellular material, water, etc. Of that, this white proportion is how much of the tumour fraction is in the proliferating region. This is how much is in the hypoxic region, and this is how much is in the necrotic core. As we our macrophages perform more and more sophisticated functions, then you can see that actually the proportion of the tumour that is occupied or comprises tumour cells actually decreases. So if we were to look at this data in isolation, we'd say, okay, macrophages are a good thing. So I think it's just sort of a warning that we really have to look at the data and try and understand what's going on and not get too sort of swept along by what the experimentalist wants us to think. We have to look at the raw data itself to form our own opinions. So what I'm going to do now then is, having sort of convinced ourselves that we can get the macrophages with our model to localise in the hypoxic region, let's now let them do some cell killing and see what happens. So, similar picture to what we had before. Here's our tumour growing happily along, and then at some time, t equals 10, we introduce macrophages onto the outside of the tumour mass, and then the macrophages are going to start migrating in, and what you can see happening is the macrophages are now killing the tumour cells, and we can see there's a big reduction in the size of the tumour mass. It's not totally eliminated. But, in fact, in this particular instance, we've effectively eliminated much of the tumour cell population, and really what we're left with is a mass of macrophages. So the previous slide was looking at a simulation where we had continuous infusion. Obviously, in practice in the clinic, you can't sort of continuously infuse somebody with a drug or a type of cell for forever. We're really limited to sort of finite periods of time. So this simulation is just showing what happens if the macrophages are only applied for a finite period of time between T equals 10 and T equals 12. As you might expect, it takes a bit of time for the macrophages to migrate into the low oxygen region, do the cell killing, and we can then, once they localize into the desired region, we see a reduction in the tumor size. However, because we're not continuously infusing, eventually these macrophages are going to die, and then we'll see regrowth of the tumor mass. So from data like this, what we might be able to do is predict, if we can predict this minimum size of the tumor mass in response to a fixed treatment with the macrophage therapy, we can predict when would be the right time or the optimum time to maybe hit with another standard therapy. Because at this time, what we've actually done is we've minimized, we would hope, the size of the hypoxic region, which is the part that's resistant to standard chemotherapy. Again, we can perform or construct similar statistics looking, so in this set of simulations, what I've done is I've just increased the lysis rate, how well the macrophages are able to kill the tumor cells. And what you can see is that as the macrophages become better at killing the tumor cells, we see a reduction in the overall tumor mass. And if again you look at this bottom panel here, which shows how the proportion of the tumor that's occupied by tumor cells, how that changes as we increase the cytotoxicity of the macrophages. So you can see that, so the grey panel is the proportion which is hypoxic. So as the macrophages become more toxic to the tumor cells, we are having the desired effect in that we are eliminating the hypoxic region. So at this point, we're left with predominantly the tumor cells residing in the outer proliferating rim. And then that would be, I suppose, a good time to hit with another standard therapy. I suppose another message to get from this is, if you're looking at it from a clinical point of view and you're thinking, what are the control parameters? What things can I manipulate? The sorts of things that we might be able to manipulate is exactly how toxic the drug is for the tumour cells, or how well the macrophages respond to the chemoattractants that are being produced. What this data here tells us is there's really not much to be gained by increasing the toxicity from here to here, and certainly from here to here, because you've eliminated all of the tumour mass. So if they had the choice of increasing one parameter or another, then there really isn't much point in putting a lot of effort into getting this extra 2%, because the return will be fairly low. So just finally then, as I mentioned earlier, if you're going to try and use such a treatment in the laboratory, there's going to be normal macrophages circulating already. So in this simulation, we have two macrophage populations. The macrophage 1 population are the normal macrophages that don't really do anything, they just occupy space. And what we do, so the tumour grows happily along with both the tumour cells and the passive macrophages. We then introduce these engineered macrophages for a certain period of time, and what we see is, again, there's a small reduction in the size of the tumour mass, and we can then predict when would be the best time to give our second therapy. In the absence of which, the tumour, once these engineered macrophages have been performed their function and they've died away, then obviously the tumour mass grows back again. Okay, so really that's all that I wanted to tell you about so far. That's as far as really we've got at the moment. So what I've tried to do is we've looked at a model to try and see whether or not there's any hope of using these macrophages trying to exploit the fact that they migrate into hypoxic regions, whether or not we can exploit that to have an additional impact on treatment. I think what we've been able to show is that it is possible we can predict a certain amount of tumour shrinkage, and indeed if the macrophages are sufficiently cytotoxic, it may be possible to eradicate all of the hypoxic tumour cells. Obviously there are many, many ways in which we need to take this work in order to have a real sort of impact on clinical treatment. So I've alluded to some of this as we've gone through. If we're typically limited to giving sort of boluses, what should be the timing and the strength of those repeat treatments? How should we coordinate this with other more standard therapies? I kind of glossed over the way in which this the macrophages kill the tumour cells. In practice, it's a little bit more complicated than that. What actually happens is the macrophages are activated to release an enzyme under hypoxia. We need to co-inject with a prodrug. And what happens is when the prodrug meets the enzyme, that produces an active drug. The active drug is absorbed by a tumour cell, but it only kills the tumour cell once the cell starts to proliferate. So there's quite a lot more detail. It may well be so that the drug is absorbed by tumour cells in the low oxygen regions, but it may only have an effect if those cells, those tumour cells, if they can be proliferating. And as I've already said, under low oxygen, they don't proliferate very much. So we really need to take into account much more accurately, or a better description of actually how these drugs work. So this is ongoing work, both from the modelling point of view and what's actually happening in the laboratory. One of the other ideas that they have is to try and manipulate the receptor expression of the macrophages so that they might be more sensitive to the chemoattractants that are being produced than the normal macrophages. Is that going to give us much benefit? So we can modify our models to try and address some of these questions and make recommendations that should hopefully inform the ongoing experiments. Obviously, I've been very simple. I've just looked at avascular tumours. If we're going to sort of, once we go in vivo, we need to start looking at vascularised tumours. And in order to do that, we need to have a good model of a vascular tumour growth. However, we need to get started somewhere. So that's why we look at the avascular tumours. Okay, so just really to summarise, and I suppose this continues from the summer school last week, there's a very rapidly growing literature on models of solid tumour growth, most of it focused around avascular tumours, tumour invasion and angiogenesis. I think what we're seeing now, and I hope this model is an example of that, is models that are more tailored to specific problems and specific situations. The development and sort of degree to which these models can be used in the real clinical setting, I think there's a lot of challenges both from data fitting and interesting mathematical problems in their own right. And I think it's going to be important that the links between the mathematicians, the modellers and the researchers, that needs to be strong and to be reinforced if we're going to make real impact on diseases such as cancer. Okay, thank you for your attention.